Okay, how many of you have family and friends waiting for you to go to the parks here at 5 o'clock? Give them a call, tell them you'll be about 30 minutes late. So. Well, I've got two objectives this afternoon, being the last one up. The first objective is to have you out of here by 5 o'clock. And the second objective is to give you a little information about what Florida is doing and linking planning and NEPA through our corridor planning process and ETDM, Efficient Transportation Decision Making. I've got my presentations broken down into three areas. I'm going to talk a little bit about what we've done in the past in corridor planning, talk a little bit about what we're working on today to enhance the planning processes on existing corridors, and then finally I'm going to spend a little time talking about some processes that we're developing to begin planning for new multimodal transportation facilities in the state. Okay. Briefly, look at some of the challenges that we've traditionally faced in planning transportation corridors. We've had to deal with multiple planning agencies. Florida DOT, we've got 7 districts, a turnpike, a couple dozen MPOs, a half a dozen expressway authorities. There's all kinds of studies that are out there that we develop. We've got action plans and master plans and sketch plans, and you know, you name it. Everybody's got a name for some kind of a planning study. We've got a multitude of planning horizons, from the 5-year tip to 25-year long-range plans to local governments developing 50-year vision plans for their areas. And, of course, we have to deal with a multitude of issues. And most of those, you know, that's listed under the past processes. Those processes still exist today, so you know, we're still having to deal with those same issues. In the past, this slide kind of shows how a project would start out in an MPO would develop a needs plan, and eventually a project or an idea would move from a needs plan into the cost-feasible long-range transportation plan. From there, it would get selected and move forward into the transportation improvement plan or the DOT's 5-year work program, sit there in a work program for 5 years, and we'd initiate a project development and environmental study, or the NEPA phase would begin, then it would move to design and permitting. And certainly there wasn't a whole lot of involvement with our stakeholders in the planning, the needs and the cost feasible. The resource partners, PD&E, we did start to involve the communities and resource partners, but you know, some of our partners were left out all the way till the permitting stage. So there was some gaps and issues we needed to deal with. So what are we doing today? A few minutes to explain some of the things that we're trying to work on the link planning in NEPA. And since I'm going last, I can eliminate a lot of the discussion since Lamar and Mike covered a lot of that. Lamar with the 6001 and 6002 requirements outlined why we're doing a lot of this stuff, so I'll skip over that. How many of you are from Florida? Let me ask it the other way around. How many aren't from Florida? There's a good number of you. Well, just in Florida, we've got a long-range, not a long-range transportation plan. We have a transportation plan, a Florida transportation plan. And we've used that as one of the ways to link, you know, our corridor planning process. And there's a number of goals that are included in the FTP, the Florida Transportation Plan, create a common approach to statewide corridor planning and the development that feeds directly into the NEPA process, better integrate planning processes to balance mobility, economic needs with community and environmental needs, help advance viable corridors. Yep, let me go back. I got myself already out of line here. But those are some of the major goals that are included in that transportation plan that we have. And as I said, that's a plan not for the DOT, it's a plan for Florida. And those are the 5 goals And obviously, in this session, we're going to spend most of the time talking about all of our time on the quality of life and environmental stewardship. But if you look at those other goals, you'll recognize that those match up pretty closely with the other breakout sessions that are going on around here today. We've got sessions on safety and sessions on mobility and sessions on funding, and they pretty much match what's in our transportation plan goals. And again, one of the overarching principles is to make transportation decisions with the goal of building communities. And I'm not going to read these quotes to you. I'll flip through them. You can always go back and pull them up if you want to get more detail as to what they say. But some of the ways we're trying to make this happen is integrate transportation decisions with land use, water and natural resource planning, and identifying environmental concerns earlier in the transportation planning process. And again, this all ties back very closely to some of the things that Lamar had talked about. So we're trying to do this. There's two areas that we're focusing on. We're trying to develop some model scopes for corridor plans that will produce information and decisions that can carry forward into the NEPA process, and then the implementation of our efficient transportation decision-making process that involves resource agencies earlier in the planning processes to guide the planning decisions and prepare for project development and environmental studies. In the corridor planning process on existing corridors, we've come up with three standard scopes that we're going to try to develop. One is a sketch plan, then a master plan that deals with evaluating limited access corridors, existing limited access corridors, and action plans deals with controlled access corridors. The sketch plan is intended to be a high-level analysis of mobility needs to help set the stage for more detailed corridor planning, help provide an interregional perspective on corridors that involve multiple urban areas. We're also working with the MPOs to give them some guidance in incorporating the same information and some of those same 6001 requirements into the as they develop their MPO long-range plans. We're going to document and describe how this overall corridor planning process fits into all our processes and manuals. As I mentioned, the development of standard scopes, working with the MPOs, linking into the statewide plans for the strategic intermodal system. And then as we go into the ETDM and the PD&E process, we'll work on our manuals. So all this is building towards and leading to the development of a NEPA document or state environmental impact report. This is kind of the Florida equivalent of Lamar's complicated drawing that I guess that was the Washington version. This is the simplified state version that...
Why make it simple when you can make it complicated? I ask you.
As we go through this process on the left, you know, you've got a large number of project alternatives and a small amount of detail, and as you work through this continuum and finish your project development phase, obviously you have much more detail and the fewer number of alternatives, or ultimately when you reach your record of decision, you've got your recommended alternative and you've got a very high level of detail to support that decision to select that alternative. And then the project would then move forward into, you know, final design construction. Again, some of the points that Lamar talked about are included over here on the left column under the elements. Those are basically the major elements that make up a NEPA document or a state environmental impact report. And what we're just trying to demonstrate is the level of detail that you would get for each of those elements. Purpose and need, as an example, at the sketch plan is probably at a high level. You maybe have 25% of that nailed down, but obviously by the time you finish the project development and environmental phase, it's 100%. Affected environment, sketch plan isn't intended to identify everything out there, but obviously the major issues that are there, and again, that continues. And the sketch plan isn't necessarily meant to involve a lot of the resource agencies or partners. It's more of an internal department planning document. So that's why we have zero for some of the environmental consequences and the agency and public coordination. There would probably be, certainly would be coordination with the MPOs and some of the planning, our planning partners, but that we wouldn't be involving resource agencies at the sketch plan. Then this next series of slides just kind of takes it down into the level of detail as to how we would develop, you know, the scope of services for a study in each of these plans. The scope obviously gets progressively narrower and more detailed as you work from a sketch plan to the PD&E study, and the purpose and need gets progressively more specific, eventually coming up with, you know, the ultimate purpose and need that's in the NEPA document. And the same progression with the alternatives and the affected environment. Obviously, as we work through these, we get more information and more specific. But the point is, we want to build on what you've gained and documented in those prior studies and not have to redo it and reinvent the wheel. Do it at a level with the right level of involvement so that you can support those decisions and use them as you go forward. Anticipated timeline, if you were to put all that end-to-end, potentially you could do that in 5 to 9 years. There's all kinds of examples of studies in Florida, and I'm sure most of the other states have projects that have been around for 20 years from the time that somebody put them in a cost-feasible plan until they completed a NEPA document. This obviously shows you could do it much faster. That's assuming you put the resources to those projects and carry them forward, which we all know doesn't necessarily happen. I'm going to spend a few minutes now on the ETDM process, efficient transportation decision making, and show how we're using that to help the corridor planning process. The goals of the ETDM process are earlier identification and consideration of potential environmental and sociocultural effects on major transportation improvements. It's kind of an easy overview of how the process is intended to work. We have basically two screening events that occur, a planning screen that takes place when the long-range transportation plans are being developed by the MPOs or our department's strategic intermodal system long-range plans are being developed. To identify and screen those projects that come from the needs plan and get included into the cost feasible plan using an environmental screening tool. These projects are sent out to a number of resource agencies to provide some input and information about the project. And then as time goes on, those projects would be screened a second time in what we call a programming screen, before the project is selected and is included into the transportation improvement plan. And from there, it goes into the typical PD&E. We get the NEPA approvals and some earlier permit coordination and on into design. So show you we've got more than 30 agencies working with the department on this process. We have agreements in place with most of them. Agreements in principle as to their participation. Several agencies, we have funding agreements with them where we're providing funding for them to provide staff to facilitate their involvement in this earlier planning initiative and earlier on in our transportation projects. We're not paying them to do the typical permitting and reviews that they're required to do by other statutes. And it's interesting, we've been doing this for a few years now, and we've had a lot of agencies basically not spend the money that we've set aside for them. A lot of them recognize that the level of effort isn't as great as they thought it would be, and they've reduced the amount of funding. Some of them have elected to terminate the funding agreements but are still participating and doing the reviews and being involved at the level we need them to participate in to get some good input on the process. The types of projects that go through the ETDM review aren't, we don't run every project that the DOT is involved in. It's basically, it's the major transportation projects where we're adding capacity. And obviously in the context of corridor planning, most of the corridor planning we're doing is, if it's not a new corridor, it's a major expansion, addition, or renovation to an existing facility. So corridor-type projects certainly would be the kind of projects that would go through the ETDM process. We would, and we've screened some transportation, public transportation projects have gone through it, bridge replacement projects, and but the typical programmatically excluded projects, resurfacing projects, there's a number of projects that do not go through the ETDM process. The agencies comment on a number of issues. They're all listed here. They pretty much match up with the NEPA kind of environmental issues. The agreements we have with the agencies are fairly specific in identifying what issues they will comment on and what issues they will review. So they're not just arbitrarily picking a project and deciding what they want to comment on. So by agreement, we expect them to comment on certain areas, and conversely, they have given us data and information that goes into the screening tool to facilitate their comments. I've mentioned the environmental screening tool several times. It's a web-based GIS application that allows, it's basically a fancy communication tool that allows us to send information out about projects to all these resource agencies. We send them information about the project as well as all the geographic information that's available in that area from anyone. There's like 500 and some odd data layers about that relates to that project areas available to them. The tool does GIS analyses that tell them how many acres of wetlands are within how many feet of the corridor or the project, and that those analyses are based on working with those agencies, and they've told us what data sets they would like us to use, what they would like to see. So we run that analysis, and all that information is generated and provided to them for their review, and then our expectation, and we have time frames where they have to report back and give us information as to their opinion or degree of effect of those projects. Both of the screenings have what we call summary reports. There's one at the planning screen and one at the programming screen. The summary reports, obviously, they include the project's purpose and need as described. One of the comments we get from the agencies is that they understand the project's purpose and need. We ask for their comments on the purpose and need. We don't ask them to approve the purpose and need. That's the Department of Transportation's call. But we make sure that they understand, or if they have questions about the purpose and need, they have the opportunity to provide that feedback. The programming screen actually initiates the advanced notification package that kind of quote, initiates the NEPA process. It goes out for the clearinghouse review and the coastal zone consistency. The reports give all the agencies the opportunity to sign up as participating agencies or review agencies. They can opt out, say there's no longer a need to be involved in the project. And the final programming summary report actually assigns the class of action, the environmental class of action for the project. I talked about some of the input we get from the agencies. They give us a degree of effect or the potential degree of effect. It's almost kind of like a risk assessment. This isn't an environmental review, but based on the information at these early screenings, they can tell us what they think the degree of effect on their particular resource is, whether it's minimal, moderate, or severe. And it gives us some input to you know, gauge the level of risk or the scope of work that we might have to engage in if we want to carry this project forward. So that's been very useful. If we have multiple agencies commenting on the same resource, if it's a different degree of effect, it's up to our DOT district offices to kind of weigh in and resolve that and assign an overall degree of effect for that project, for that resource or issue. Just a quick summary of some of the benefits, some of the expected and realized benefits. The agency communication and coordination has been an obvious realized benefit. So our districts have been using this process for a couple of years now. We've had half a dozen projects where the class of action has been reduced, where it was expected that it was going to be an EIS, and by running it through the screening, the programming screen, it was downgraded to an EA, and a couple of EAs that were downgraded to what we call in Florida as type 2 categorical exclusions. There's actually been a few projects that have been killed as a result of the screening, which is a good thing. It's, you know, we don't need to be spending a lot of time and resources chasing projects that've got some real serious issues. With limited resources, we can be putting them towards the projects that have a better chance of going forward. The final section is to look ahead and discuss some of the things we're looking at as we develop processes to help plan for new multimodal facilities in the state, recognizing that we'll need to plan for additional corridors to serve anticipated population and economic growth over the next 50 years. Again, the 2025 FTP is driving that. The FTP says we're charged with improving mobility between regions in Florida and between Florida and other states and nations, make optimal use of existing transportation facilities and services through strategies that address traffic operations, incidents and emergency management, access management, surrounding land uses before expanding those facilities, introduce new modal options to develop new transportation hubs or corridors when existing facilities cannot meet mobility or connectivity needs, and work with our partners to develop statewide criteria for expanding existing or developing new strategic intermodal system facilities that connect economic regions and are coordinated with our regional and community partners, along with community visions. As we look to the future, we define a new facility as one that connects Florida to other states or interconnects broad regions within Florida. Generally, these are high-speed, high-capacity facilities. We're talking about major highways such as our interstates or other limited access roads, as well as major rail lines and waterways. These facilities move both people and freight. They may involve multiple modes of transportation, and they may involve other linear facilities such as telecommunications or utility systems. We're developing a new facility planning process that will coordinate the statewide corridor planning with other statewide planning processes related to land and water management, growth management, environmental stewardship, and economic development. We're creating partnerships with regional and local entities to guide the planning and development of viable corridors and ensure that the corridor planning is integrated with other planning activities in each region with emphasis on regional visioning and growth planning. Create a consistent approach to statewide corridor identification and development that will extend the planning horizon out to 50 years or better to support long-range visioning of Florida's future growth. Use objective criteria to guide decision-making, integrate new corridor planning processes with the established ETDM in the existing PD&E process, involve partners earlier and throughout the corridor planning process, integrate corridor planning with planning for economic development, land use, community livability, and environmental investments, and finally advance viable corridors or segments earlier to the next phase of project development. We envision there's three stages that this process we'd go through. The concept stage is the first one. During this stage, we're working at a level of a broad study area or SLOS to connect origins and destinations, such as from Tampa Bay to Jacksonville. The proposed screening criteria in this stage would emphasize whether there's a statewide mobility or connectivity need. Again, this is similar to the sketch plan on an existing corridor. We'd look at issues such as the level of people and freight flows between two beginning and end regions and whether existing corridors can meet that demand. The outcome of the concept stage would be a framework for future study of viable corridors, including the potential improvement concepts and key issues that will require attention when moving forward. The visioning process as a key tool that we would use in this, several communities and areas within Florida are doing some local visioning, so that is certainly a tool that we would use to input into this as we would be looking at future land development. It's important that the planning for future statewide corridors be consistent with regional visions where they exist. Where these visions are undertaken, it's going to be important that the critical decisions about transportation be made after the broader vision is determined, so the transportation needs do not drive the vision. The second stage of this process would be what we would call the feasibility stage. At this point, we've moved from a broad study area to look at more focused corridors connecting logical beginning and end points. We will also start to lay out alternative routes and other modes that may need to be that may need the connectivity need. Our screening criteria is now getting more specific. Impacts of alternative routes or modes on travel time, reliability and cost, compatibility with existing envisioned land use, potential benefits for economic development, and areas that we'd like to avoid are identified. The feasibility stage will evaluate the build consensus, will evaluate and build consensus around more precise definitions of corridor needs and develop an action plan for meeting these needs while assessing key issues in the corridor. A tool that we might employ in the feasibility stage, this is an example of the corridor analysis tool that South Carolina used. It's a GIS-based tool that basically with inputting values and environmental criteria or economic, social, land use criteria, it can develop a best fit path. And the CAT tool kind of came up with the red line, and the ultimate design corridor matched that fairly closely. So that's just an example of some of the corridor planning tools that could be used in the future. And then finally, the last stage of this is basically taking it into the existing ETDM and PD&E process that I've already explained. If a transportation corridor moves beyond the feasibility stage, then we would transition it right in, run it through the ETDM screening process, and develop it like we would the evaluation of existing corridors through the ETDM process. There's an overview of the new facility planning process. And again, you kind of see that at that concept stage, it's kind of a yes-no, go forward, you know, stop or go. If it's a go, you evaluate it again with a little more information, maybe some more tools. Yes-no, go, no-go. If it's a go, then you kind of use the ETDM screenings and the typical project development process. Again, this would be similar to the scopes that we have for the existing corridors. For these new multimodal corridors, we would have to develop some generic standard scope of services for what a concept study embodies and what a feasibility study embodies, and get that all made part of our processes. We're not really there yet on these, but this is just kind of a look into the future as to how we might take the corridor planning process a little further in the future. So with that, open up for questions for any or all of us with a couple minutes to spare.